This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Jan Wellinger, and thank you for joining me for weekend programming. Here is what we have lined up for you today. In just a moment, we're going to kick things off with My Prague, where a guest will be taking Ian Willoughby around her favorite parts of the Czech capital. That will be followed by our Foodie Goes to Prague regular column with Hallie Crane. This week, she visits the Gastronomy Museum with I think positive results. And we're going to round things out with the second part of our two-part interview, our arts interview with Mila Firstova. So that's all ahead. Let's get things started. Here's Ian Willoughby and My Prague.
For nearly a decade, Camille Hunt has been co-running Hunt Kastner, a private Prague gallery that represents leading local artists such as Eva Kotyatkova and Dominic Lang. In 2013, the gallery moved to Žižkov from the Letná district, which the Canadian-born Hunt has long called home. Our tour of her Prague begins with a drink on the terrace of the Letná Chateau, which is adjacent to a beer garden with stunning views of the city.
I have lived in Letná for 15-plus years. I love this part of the city because of the parks, I suppose, mainly. And it's a very quick, nice walk into town through the park, so it's lovely. You don't have to cross any horrible highways, and it's nice being high up.
How would you characterize the neighborhood?
I wouldn't say it's any different. Well, maybe there's less... It's perhaps a little bit less expat-y than maybe Vinohrady, which is the sort of the area that people seem to favor more because it has maybe more restaurants and more shops, and it's also a very lovely part of town. And Davidze is also very nice and maybe more foreigner friendly just because it has more access to more shops and restaurants and amenities. So Letná is actually surprising because we always say, you know, when are the good restaurants going to open? Because it is such a lovely part and so close to town, and so many people come here on the weekends to the park. But there are some good places, but they're few and far between still.
How would you say Letná has changed over your decade and a half living here?
Not terribly much. I mean, of course, there are better shops and restaurants, again, going back to that. And, you know, the park as well, maybe better maintained. The lovely part about Letná are the parks, but because we have so many trees and greenery in the park, they don't put many trees on the actual streets, which I keep on thinking they will do eventually, but... So that's the difference. With Vinohrady's got nice leafy trees everywhere, which makes the streets really beautiful.
Also, I don't know if you find this, but Prague is relatively small, but still I find myself hanging out with people who live near me. It's not London or somewhere. There's no particular reason that I wouldn't come over here to Letná to go out, but I don't do it.
Well, actually, we have this sort of running joke with our friend. We have a lot of friends who do live in Vinohrady, and they're always... It's the sort of battle between Letná and Vinohrady, and we always say that it's much better here, at least the park, at least the beer garden, than Rigor Visadi. And I stand by that. because of the views. But it's true that, I don't know, maybe as we get older, we're less inclined to travel even short distances. I don't know. I mean, I'm always in Vinohrady and Žižkov because the gallery moved there. Now it'll be almost 2 years. I mean, the gallery was in Letná, around the corner from where I live, so I probably got out less, you know. But I quite like that it's not close by, because then I do actually have to travel to get to work, and it's a nice way of sort of clearing your head. And also, after work, I go and do more things after work before I get home. If you live right around the corner from where you work, it's kind of hard to think of going away and then coming back. So I think I prefer this arrangement, anyways, for now.
And you were telling me earlier that you think Prague is starting to become more lively at the weekends than it used to be.
Yes, it definitely is. And actually, we always had openings at the gallery during the week, usually on Thursday or even Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I never thought of doing it Friday because, you know, everybody would tell us that, you know, nobody would show up. And we also thought that, but in the last year or so, we started doing them Fridays, and there's no difference. And I think young people don't necessarily, you know, take off on Friday immediately for the cottage because there's so much more going on in Prague nowadays.
I used to live in Brzeszowice, and there was a pub that closed at the weekend, which for an Irish person is just inconceivable.
Exactly. So that's just really not the case. I mean, a few people said, "Oh, Friday," you know, but it's proven to be fine. And actually, the problem was when we did it Thursday, we were competing with so many other events. That's actually the reason we thought of doing it on Friday. So
I guess Prague has become more attractive at weekends with all the farmers markets and other activities, little festivals.
Yeah, exactly. So people are staying in town. I mean, obviously they still, you know, many people still have country cottages and they do go, but it's not every single weekend, I think.
In recent times, Letná, long one of the most desirable locales in Prague, has, if anything, become even more hip. Helping drive that resurgence has been Františka Křížka, which today boasts the kind of funky cafes and shops one might find in the cool quarter of a Western European city. A long-term resident of the area, Camille Hunt has watched the street flourish with interest.
There's quite a few interesting new places here in the last couple of years that have opened up, and the first one was Bistro Osum, and you know, they serve quiches and good coffee, and actually they have art exhibitions. Also, very good ones. Quite a few of our artists show there, too. They've enlisted the help of a good curator to do those for them. And then there's Page 5, a nice art bookshop. And there's a place called Sneaker Barber that sells sneakers and, I think, vinyl records.
My friend had a bag design shop across the street in what is now part of the Bistro
Osum. That's right. So they've expanded, yes.
I haven't been here for maybe a year. There are a couple of new places, including this Page 5. How quickly has this area become, or this street even become, hipster central?
Just in the last year and a half, two or so. Very recent, yeah.
And do you think this renaissance here is in any way linked to the fact that we're quite near the Academy of Fine Arts, or is it only a coincidence?
I think it's a coincidence. But maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I was always bemoaning the fact that the Art Academy is here, and for so long there was a dearth of nice cafes and nice places to go to, and now that's changing. So possibly, but I don't think... I mean, I think every area of Prague has this little thing going on where there's some nice little new shops, design shops, cafes, restaurants like Vršovice, and, you know, that's quite recent as well. So I don't think it's particular to Letná.
We're also outside here, a place that's, I guess, some kind of dry cleaners, but it looks so old school. I often wonder how these places survive. You always see a few in Prague that look like they haven't changed at all since 1992 or something.
That's true, and it almost looks like a new place that's trying to look old and hipster.
It's the ultimate hipster place.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, no, I guess they, I don't know if they have control, you know, rent control, or, but it could be the case.
Also, when I see this bookshop here with all these design books and art books and that kind of thing, I wonder, do people have the money for this stuff?
Well, I guess they do. We'd have to ask them. You know, I think that's the thing, is like these shops, I mean, they don't open because they think they're going to make tons of money. It's like when we open a gallery, I mean, there are lots of other things we could do if we were planning to make a lot of money. So, I you know, this bookshop, Page 5, has beautiful books. I don't think they're flying off the shelves, but that wasn't the motivation for opening it, you know. And that's what's nicer, is that in Prague there's more of this, you know, people opening up shops not just make tons of money. So it's, they do a business, but it's more about contributing to the quality of life and having some nice places to meet up with people, eating good food, reading good books.
Sometimes when I see these places, I think, maybe uncharitably, that they're kind of playing at being in Berlin.
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, if you look in this Page 5, I mean, of course, a lot of the books, I mean, they do have a lot of Czech books, but of course there's less art books being published in Czech than in English or even in German, so they do carry a lot of foreign books, but they're about art, so, you know, that, even if you don't speak English or German fluently, you might appreciate the books. Yeah, but I know I'm really happy because for a long time we were, as I said, we were sort of complaining that there, you know, there was very high-end stuff in Prague or very low-end. There wasn't something in the middle, you know. It was just like very fancy, you know, big labels, name brands, or, you know, the bottom of the barrel. And now, so, you know, it's nice to have these kind of shops that are focused on nice things, even if it doesn't make a huge amount of money. But that's why they, I guess that's why they're located in Prague 7 and not Prague 1.
From Františka Křížka, it's a short walk to the Veletržní Palace, a huge functionalist structure that houses the Czech National Gallery's modern art collection. Sitting in the institution's airy Café Jedna, gallerist Camille Hunt and I discuss recent changes at the National Gallery, and the Prague art world in general.
The entire National Gallery and Veletržní Palace have gone through a revival of sorts. There's a new director and a new head curator, and so we hold out much hope that the programming of the National Gallery will be better, and it already is better, and just open up to exhibitions abroad and bringing foreign artists here. For a long time, it was a very controversial place, and a lot of artists kind of shunned it.
Is that because of the previous head, Milan Kniszak?
Yeah, that was part of it, yes, exactly.
What's the relationship between a gallery like yours and a big institution like the National Gallery?
Well, it's we should all work in concert, you know. So, and normally what happens is that institutions buy from galleries, because galleries promote the artists and develop their careers, and the institutions are supportive of that. So it should be, you know, institutions, gallery artists, and collectors should all be very supportive of one another. That's how the system should work, but it doesn't always work like that. So
I guess you have great interest in the National Gallery becoming more progressive.
Yes, exactly. I mean, they have their budget is very low, so they have not bought anything from us. And, you know, because the state institutions of the city have, you know, their budgets are not very high, they do ask for artists to loan them pieces, give them pieces, you know. So that hopefully will change, because artists can't just give and loan pieces. Otherwise, you know, they can't be artists. Mainly, we're just happy that the National Gallery and other state and city institutions have better programming, so they can bring more interesting shows here, bring in curators who will then look at what Czech artists are doing, that these institutions will cooperate with institutions abroad also to bring their shows here, and vice versa. For a long time, they were working a little bit in isolation, and that's not good, and so things are changing. I mean, slowly but surely.
How has Prague changed as a city in which to run a gallery and deal in art?
It's gotten better. I mean, the market here is very small, but it's developing, and at first we would only sell painting to local collectors, but that's also changing, so they're a little bit more adventurous and not so risk-averse.
Apart from your gallery, what other small galleries would you recommend to visitors?
That's easy, because there are not that many. There's one around the corner from us, Lucia Durdova Gallery, and she opened there are quite a few in the last couple of years that have opened up. There's Philip Polanski, who is just up here. He used to be in Smíchov, and now he's on Veletržní, so that's another plus for the Prague 7 scene. Yeah, and some other neighborhood galleries in our neighborhood where the gallery is Mikuláš Neván. And, I mean, there are a lot of good small gallery spaces, artist-run spaces. The problem is there are not many commercial galleries who are really promoting the artist's work abroad. So that needs, hopefully that'll get better. That situation will also improve.
Is it a competitive world?
To an extent, but I think as I always say, there's like a lot of good artists in Prague, not many galleries, so there are many more artists we would like to work with, but we just don't have the capacity to do so. So in that way, it's not that competitive, like we're not always trying to poach each other's artists, which is more the case abroad, where many more galleries, and so they often want the same artists. And so right now, it's more definitely more collegial than competitive.
Okay, and the voice you heard there was Camille Hunt, who has been co-running Hunt Kastner, a private Prague gallery here in the Czech capital. She was showing in Willoughby around Prague some of her favorite spots. Now, though, we're going to continue with our regular feature, An American Foodie Goes to Prague, Hallie Crane.
I wish I had visited the Gastronomy Museum when I first arrived in Prague, so that I would have understood where Czech culinary traditions originated from before embarking on my eating tour of the city. The museum provides an anthropological look into the history of Czech cuisine and the history of man's relationship with food in general. I met with the museum's curator, Ladislav Provan, to discuss the origin of a few Czech dishes. What I thought would be a simple interview turned into a long discussion about the gastronomy of the Czech Republic. He and his wife Nina are the curators of the museum, and their warm welcome and willingness to assist me in my research made me feel like I was entering my own family's home. Ladislav Provan told me he was raised in the Czech Republic. An architect by trade, he originally built hotels, and through his experiences within the hospitality industry, his knowledge of foodstuffs has become extensive. From the invention of fire to present day, the museum took me through a timeline of food culture. I walked down the multiple floors of exhibits and life-size models, detailing traditional kitchens from the Dark Ages to the early 20th century, including traditional cooking tools and products. A modern test kitchen is used to teach Czech cooking classes and etiquette classes. As I walked past, assistants set out a table covered in a variety of different silver utensils. I picked up a funny-looking spoon with a bended handle and looked perplexed. I was told it was used for an amuse-bouche. A room detailing the most famous Czech chefs included a handprint from Jaroslav Sapik. I blushed with embarrassment because I haven't actually heard of any of these chefs either. One section that stood out in particular was a flat screen showing slides of traditional Czech dishes. As the dishes were displayed, I realized that I have not actually eaten or even heard of some of them. All these months in the Czech Republic, and yet somehow traditional home-cooked Czech food still seems as elusive as ever. The first dish that stood out for me was called kuba, a grain dish that is made from barley, lard, and dried mushrooms. This vegetarian dish was sometimes served on Christmas Day, I learned, because some families follow the tradition to abstain from eating meat during the holidays. The next dish on the screen was a mushroom chowder called kulajda. After seeing both of these traditional dishes that included mushrooms, I wondered why I haven't actually eaten any mushrooms in Czech food since being in Prague. Many times, people have told me that home-cooked meals are really where it is at with regards to Czech cuisine. But I have to wonder, does that make eating out, once you try the available classics like goulash and roast duck, a pointless dead end? How is a foreigner like me supposed to sample all these magical soups and cakes and all the rest of it made by these mythical babichki in villages across the country? After the tour, Provan and I sat down to talk Czech food. Over a sip of homemade mead, he told me about his upbringing in the Czech Republic. I was astonished to hear that mushroom picking is almost an obsession around most of the country. Provan told me that, like other Czechs, he learned from a young age how to distinguish between edible and inedible mushrooms. It's a rite of passage. He also told me of the time he was in New York City and started gathering mushrooms in the park, and skeptical passerbys approached him saying he was crazy and should just go buy them at the store. For the next hour, Provan and I discussed how communism affects food culture in the country, and how it preserved some traditions while depleting others. I've eaten a lot of Czech food, but I did not realize that caraway seed, known as kmín in Czech, but not to be confused with a similar-looking and sounding spice called cumin, is a very common spice used in Czech cuisine. And when it comes to herbs, here too we find rare, lesser-known names, like marjoram for goulash and potato pancakes, and even lovage for use in soups. My time spent with Provan at the Gastronomy Museum made me realize just how much more time, research, and eating I still have to do during my time in the Czech Republic. I originally thought that since I had eaten a lot of Czech food, I had been adequately exposed to Czech culinary culture. But as I left the museum, I realized that I have only scratched the surface. In fact, I confess to being a little jealous. I wish I had a Czech grandmother who could cook me all these traditional dishes that I keep hearing about. Sweet dishes like buchti and livanečky and bublanina, soups like češnečka and zelnačka and bramboračka, savory dishes like telesi na paprice. Where else can I end but with a quote from Albert Einstein? The more I learn, the more I realize how much I don't know or have yet to taste.
Okay, that is our American foodie, Hallie Crane. Last year, Czech-British artist Mila Firstová made international headlines for her design of the cover of Coldplay's newest album, Ghost Stories, an etching of an angel's wings over starry waters. Recently, the artist opened a new exhibition in the Czech Republic, and on that occasion, she was interviewed by Radio Prague's editor-in-chief, Mirek Krupička. In part two of our two-part interview, he began by asking Mila about how she got her start in Great Britain.
When I first came to Britain as a young student, I kind of thought that it's my English period starting. You know, I looked for influences there and stuff, and I was there for about a year. And when my fellow students visited Prague, they came back and they said, "Oh, Mila, your work is so Czech, isn't it?" And I said, "What is it?" You know, I didn't realize that. So I think that I have always, you know, always been looking around. And as you say, you are totally right. Printmaking and graphic art is a very big thing in Czech Republic. Some amazing, amazing artists here that have inspired me. One of my favorite artists, he's done few etchings, but he's mostly a painter, is Josef Šíma. I really love him. And then from kind of more current people, of course, you know, Jiří Andrle is an icon of this, you know, of Czech printmaking. I also love work of Kornatovský, who taught me at the university. So there's, you know, there's many, many people. And I think because we kind of talking in the studio environment, it's only a few things, a few people coming into my head, but I think there's literally tens and tens, a lot, many people that I really respect for their work.
And the big international artists, people like Picasso or, I don't know, British artists?
Yeah, but I do love Picasso. I love his printmaking, you know, I love his etchings, I love his drawings. I think that with drawing, there's something else going on than with painting, that, you know, the line doesn't really exist in the world, does it? It's, you know, line is a sort of abstract concept, and I think that line is very, very intimate, you know, same as your handwriting is very recognisable as yours, and everybody's drawings is very recognisable as yours. So, and I think that, you know, Picasso is just total genius. Hockney is a genius. I love Kiki Smith, a German artist, sorry, American artist. Many of actually Tracy Emin. She's a conceptual artist, but she does a lot of etchings and printmaking as well. So again, I just, you know, it's just such joy, especially in Britain, that there's so many galleries now open to public. Tate Modern, you know, next to Thames, is growing. It's really becoming this amazing, extraordinary palace of art. And I think that, you know, one can just, you know, be lost in whatever they exhibit there. So there's many artists again internationally.
Do you have time to go to galleries now? We must be very busy with the family, etc.
Yeah.
So do you have time to absorb art outside?
Yeah, you're really asking poignant questions. I think, you know, it's exactly, you know, the sort of thing that I'm trying to resolve. I'm actually quite a homely person. You know, I love my time where I quietly work and when the children are nearby when they're sleeping. But I need the times to go out. And in Czech media, people often think that I live in London, but I don't. I live about 2 hours away from London in Cotswolds, which is a very beautiful part of Britain, very traditional. You know, sheep everywhere, all these kind of old stone houses. It's very, very lovely, quite quiet part of Britain. But from there, I make very regular trips to London. And my husband's parents live in Oxford, which is an hour from London, so we always hand over the children and they kindly look after them. And my husband Quentin and I, because we're both artists, we just go for these marathons of art exhibitions and stuff. I think the last time we've managed to see 10 in one day. At the end of it, I was sort of pleading, and suddenly I was no artist. I was just a woman with painful feet. And but it's, you know, it's wonderful. And then obviously when you then kind of take it back to Cheltenham, you know, you have time to absorb it and digest it, and that's a great thing for me.
Do you consider yourself a Czech artist or a Czech-born British artist or a global artist? Where do you position yourself within the UK?
Well, I consider myself human, basically. But, you know, human with a Czech heart, I think. I always try for my work to be kind of universal, and it has been a nice thing for me that even though I have my history is quite different to many people in Britain who are mostly my collectors, that there are things that resonate for all of us, you know, this kind of the basic human experience. So I think, you know, Britain is now my home, but Czech is also my home. I'm just kind of, you know, quite fluid in that, and I love them both, really. They both mean something else to me.
Finally, can you say a few words about your upcoming projects? Is there any other big thing that you are working on?
Well, when my cooperation with Coldplay finished, I was approached to make a series of illustrations for a New York best-selling book for young adults. It's called Mortal Instruments. It's by Cassandra Clare. And as I said before, I'm not an artist who works for commission before, because it doesn't usually go well, I think. But because I was in this kind of way of working with the two small children and with this kind of dialogue with somebody interesting, I felt I wanted to return back to my solo work through something like this. And it has always been, although I'm not an illustrator, it has always been a dream for me to try something with a book. And as a young person of that age to whom the book is targeted, books were just so important part of my daily life. They're of course important now. I don't have as much time because of everything else, but books are important, and I wanted to try something like this. So I did a series of illustration for book covers that have just been released, and on the 17th of July I think we're going to have a launch in London with Cassandra Clare present. So that's one small thing I have done. But now that, you know, that's done, and I am making new works that are, again, just Mila works, and Galleria Miro, who I'm exhibiting with, features my new installation called The Golden Fish Will Fly Above the Clouds. And it's basically this shell of fishes, quite large altogether, so 3 by 3 meters, that are printed individually quite on from metal plates. They're all drawn in quite a high level of detail. And my idea with them was really to kind of break from that rectangular shape of a frame. And, you know, so these fish flow directly on the wall of the gallery mirror. And because Galleria Miro is a very, very beautiful space, it's a former church, very white, very sort of spiritual, glorious, gorgeous space, it somehow the fish, I think, fit there quite well.
Is there anything that you would like to add? Maybe something that we have not covered?
I think I would just like to thank everybody who is looking at, you know, at my art. I often feel that it really is through those who look at art that the art really gains its fulfillment. That it's, you know, it's not just in the hands of the artist. It really is in the eye of the beholder. I'm so grateful for it, you know. Last week I flown from Britain with my two young children, and many people who fly with two young children know how exhausting thing that is on a plane. We've landed, and my father collected us from Prague Airport. It was night, and Dr. Smolák, the director of Galleria Miro, said, "Come and see your show. It's been installed. They've done it without me." So we were driving through night Prague, very beautiful experience, and then I entered the gallery. And it was just amazing. They really have done a very, very good job in curating and, you know, installing the exhibition. I was very happy with it. And then we continued on to my hometown, which is Hradec Králové, and driven through rainy motorway and sky full of stars came on radio. And I was listening to it, and I was just thinking that, you know, this really is like a dream, except if I dreamt it, and, you know, I would just think I'm really overdoing this. This is quite an improbable dream, but it is actually happening.
And you've been listening to a special part two art interview. Mirek Krupička, the head of Radio Prague, was talking there to Czech-British artist Mila Firstová. And what a story. Fantastic stuff there. I'm afraid, though, that we are just about out of time. A quick reminder, if you want to comment on anything, write to english@radio.cz. Otherwise, that's it. I'm Jan Wellinger. For myself and the Radio Prague team, thank you for joining us, and take care.